Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us today for Lifetime's webinar. We are Lifetime Adoption, and we're excited to discuss our topic for the evening, Modern Christian Adoption. And my name is Kim King. Heather Featherston of Lifetime Adoption is also with us. And if you are brand new to learning about Lifetime Adoption, please visit our site, lifetimeadoption.com, where you can read all about us, the team that would be helping you if you partner with Lifetime Adoption, our FAQ, and lots of really great information is there at lifetimeadoption.com. If you participate in social media, we are also on Facebook and Instagram, etc. You can find us under Lifetime Adoption, of course. And the phone number here at Lifetime, if you do have some questions or just want to touch base with us about anything on your mind after the webinar is completed, maybe in the days to come, the phone number here at Lifetime Adoption is 727-493-0933. Now, if you are brand new to starting the adoption process, or maybe are just learning about Lifetime Adoption specifically and haven't already applied with Lifetime Adoption, here at Lifetime, we actually offer a free application. So that is a service that we provide for inquiring adoptive parents. It is free of charge. You will find that at lifetimeadoption.com/apply. That form has been streamlined over the years and should take maybe 10 minutes to complete. It is all exploratory. And what that means is when you fill out your application there at our site, lifetimeadoption.com/apply, you are not obligating yourself to working with Lifetime. And you are also not officially applying for things like a home study just by filling that out. And even if you don't have a home study, it's perfectly fine to fill that out. It's a great form to fill out, a great next step to take naturally in your process as adoption may be on your heart and mind today. You should feel comfortable filling that out, and then we can explore a little further. And I believe that the application is so instrumental to adoptive parents early in their path, because it helps you access more information about Lifetime as it may directly pertain to you. Also, since Lifetime Adoption works on an opening basis, we're able to let you know within just a few days, 1 to 5 business days, whether or not we can continue exploring further and that we may possibly have an opening to explore further with you. So feel free to fill that out no matter where you are in your process. Again, it's online, and that's lifetimeadoption.com/apply. If you would like to request any adoption information, you can email a request to apply@lifetimeadoption.com, and we can send you our basic information to help you get started and learning a little bit more via email as well. Of course, we're happy to speak with you at 727-493-0933. And we are able to speak with you or call you right back if it's after hours. And we are excited to explore adoption with you. And Heather, thank you for being here with us tonight as we discuss modern Christian adoption.
Oh, you're welcome, Kim. This is something that's very close to my heart. So I'm more than happy to be here and share a little more so that people understand, especially this month. It's National Adoption Awareness Month. The month of November every year is National Adoption Month, so it's a great time to talk about it. I also want to encourage the audience, if you do have questions tonight and you are online, you can pop out the questions box if you're listening live, and you can answer or ask any questions as we go through tonight's presentation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's what I was going to say, Heather. We encourage your interaction, your comments, your questions. And we see a great group of people here with us tonight, some familiar faces and some new faces as well. So we're excited that you are setting aside this time to grow and learn more and choosing to do so with us here at Lifetime Adoption. If you are brand new to Lifetime, I think it's important for us to share that we are an adoption agency in the U.S. We are a licensed Florida adoption agency, and we work with adoptive parents from all across the nation. The only state that we cannot assist adoptive parents in is New York. We can assist birth parents in every state across the nation. So if you have a question on your mind as to whether or not we can assist in your state, we can, unless you're an adoptive family living in New York. So just to kind of share a little bit about who we are, we primarily assist birth moms who are considering adoption for their babies. And I think that is a big part of modern Christian adoption these days, wouldn't you say, Heather?
Absolutely. And that really is kind of where our heart is also. A lot of women today who are considering placing their children for adoption. And as Kim said, it's primarily pregnant moms, but occasionally we do work with mothers who are parenting young children who for a number of reasons need to make that change to place them for adoption. They are, like I say, that's just our heart. Many of us who've been here many, many years have worked with, had the opportunity to help, support, and really just show Christ's love to these moms who are in crisis situations, because that is often what it is. Women don't, you know, little girls don't think, oh, you know, when I grow up, I want to place my baby for adoption. It really is something that is coming out of a great need and a great understanding in most cases that they want more for their child than they can provide.
Mm-hmm. And Heather, I just want to give a shout out to a couple of our attendees tonight. Mm-hmm. We have some ladies that work at a pregnancy resource center. I believe separately, one's in Virginia and the other one is in Tennessee. That's a different person. One is in New York. We can assist birth parents, expecting parents in New York. We just can't assist adoptive parents in New York. So I see that you are here to gather more information. And I just want to give a shout out to the work that you do every day, tirelessly on staff or as a volunteer. It is crucial to what we're all doing here in our country today and in the world today in making a difference each time someone makes that contact. And considering that we are an instrument that God has, that we're placed in their path for a reason. And we have just such beautiful relationships with pregnancy centers all across the nation. And you can also request more information that is geared specifically to your center if you haven't already received it or haven't gone through our training with our Diana here. We've gotten such positive feedback from Diana's training that she provides to pregnancy centers. It's a free training that we can provide, and it can be virtual. So you can reach out if you have questions about that.
Definitely.
And I think that is definitely a big part of modern Christian adoption, is that the pregnancy centers are more like the boots on the ground. Mm-hmm. You are likely to be their first contact if you work at a pregnancy center. And definitely. Many of the women that we hear from have a connection with their local pregnancy center and then reach out to us because they trust their pregnancy center, and their pregnancy center has gotten to know and vet and trust lifetime adoption. So, that's great. Just wanted to give that shout out. So, Heather, perhaps you can share with us modern Christian adoption. This might not be a term that many people have heard, but it is definitely where we are today in the adoption world. What is modern adoption not? What are some things that this is not?
Well, you know, sometimes it's easier when we're thinking about a term like modern adoption to start with what it isn't. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, there's a few things it isn't. You know, it definitely is not the closed adoption of the 50s and 60s. That is when women often went to, I mean, the story they'd give was they'd go to their aunt's house for 6 months. Really, they were often going to maternity homes out of state, out of sight, to have their babies. It was a completely different culture in the 50s, 60s, even into the 70s. It was unacceptable socially to be unwed and pregnant. It just wasn't okay. You know, you think about the TV shows of that era. You know, there was Leave It to Beaver and My Three Sons. And then, you know, a little later there were shows that may have shown divorce and remarriage, like the Brady Bunch, but there weren't any pregnant girls. You know, Marcia never had a pregnant friend at school. it just was not socially acceptable. So those mothers were sent away. They had their babies. At the time, it was thought the best practice was to whisk the baby out of the room. Many of those mothers didn't know if they had a boy or girl, didn't know where their child went. They just were told their child was adopted. They might get a tiny bit of information, but it wasn't much. And then we kind of, as the 80s dawned, we kind of went into a new era where women could choose between open, semi-open, and closed adoption. Closed adoption really was starting to refer more to the information and the contact. In a closed adoption, there would be limited information and no contact. In a semi-open adoption, there would be some information, but very limited contact. And even in an open adoption, there would be more information. The birth and adoptive parents might meet each other. But even then, even when I started working at Lifetime in 2002, most of the post-adoption contact was letters and pictures, sometimes even letters and pictures through a third party. That was kind of as open adoption got by, like I say, around 2000. So now we are in a completely different world than the 50s, 60s, I would say even in the 90s. We are in a world where not only is it celebrated when women are single and pregnant, you know, they make TV shows about it. It's something that most people, you know, it certainly is not that socially unacceptable place anymore. And from a technological standpoint, when you look at social media, we can find anyone in an instant. I mean, it doesn't take too long to find people. So this hiding behind closed adoption, it simply isn't anymore. So what modern adoption is today, it really is about putting the power in the hands of the pregnant mother. Because also today what we have is we have a culture that embraces abortion. And whether it's chemical through like the pill, or whether it is medical through an actual abortion or anything in between, that again is embraced, and in many states it's celebrated. So today we have women who choose to carry their pregnancy to term, who choose to place that child in the arms of an adoptive parent. Those women are doing it, you know, kind of against what might be easy. It's easy to take a pill and have a chemical abortion. Many times it's easy to think, oh, no, I'll just parent my baby. It's not a problem. Like I'm on Medicaid and I can get extra support from the state. It seems easy. And women today are encouraged to parent. In fact, many times their mothers are the ones who are pressuring against thinking about adoption and for parenting. Oh, no, it's great. I'll help you. So today, women who are looking at adoption, I mean, gosh, it's such a brave decision to put your baby in the arms of a stranger, even someone you've met and gotten to know. Still, it's someone you may not have known. So, but what modern adoption is today is it is the answer to what women need to make these brave choices for their children. Modern adoption allows a woman to choose the family. She can choose a family from her state, from another state. She can choose a family who's, you know, has kids or doesn't have kids, who's Catholic or Christian, or, you know, who are school teachers, or you know, maybe one's a nurse. They have animals. They, you know, women look for a variety of things when they are looking to choose a family for their baby. And they have that choice. What that does for adoptive parents, it puts them in a little tougher place, because in the 50s and 60s, you know, you just waited till your number came up. Shoot, probably in the 80s and 90s, the same. You were number 42. When you worked your way up to number one, the next baby was yours. With modern adoption, you are waiting to be chosen by a mom. And that's one of the big differences in modern adoption. But the reality is these women are choosing adoption, period. They're choosing it. So they want a say. They want to know their child's going to be safe. They want to know their child's going to be loved. And they want to know who and where their child is. And the reason that's so important is really kind of the second aspect of modern adoption, which is that contact in the future. They can choose the type of contact they want. And it's not, it doesn't fit into three little boxes. It is really on kind of a spectrum of where they are and how they are feeling and what their relationship is with you, the adoptive parents. Most women today, when you ask them, you know, what are you hoping for with contact in the future? Many of them will say things like, well, I'm not really sure. Or, well, you know, I'd like to have visits. I'd like to keep in touch. I'd like to be a part of my child's life. Those are things that they say. And we share with them our kind of guidelines, kind of boundaries too, because getting together every weekend, that's not adoption. That's going to turn into co-parenting. And we're very open and honest with that. The expectation for an open relationship is, you know, getting together for visits once or twice a year and maybe sharing updates periodically through the year. And sometimes when I share that with families, they're like, oh, that's more than we're open to. This is a stranger. We don't know her. What if she uses drugs? What if? But I always challenge them to say, you know, I know it can be hard right now. It's hard for the mom too. But what you have to keep in mind is this is someone you're going to have the opportunity to get to know. And in so many adoptions, I can tell you story after story where the birth mother looked through photos and videos of families. She chose a family. They started talking on the phone and they found this connection they neither knew they were looking for. They felt, the best way I can describe it is like most of us in our lives have met someone that we just became fast friends with. You know, it just, it's almost like they were a missing part of your life or your place right where you are now that you didn't know you were missing till you met them. And it's like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. Look at all these things we have in common. And maybe we think alike, or maybe we like the same foods, or maybe we're allergic to the same things, or there's just something. And often what it is a familiarity. They see something familiar in the family they chose. And so suddenly this relationship starts to bloom. And the baby, I don't want to say the baby becomes secondary, but the baby becomes secondary. It's what brought them together. But they are forging a relationship for the future because they all share a love for this child. So, like I say, it's hard to put limits or expectations on something when you haven't met her yet. You don't know her. So it's great for families, you know, to kind of stay open to learning more, especially. So that's the second aspect of modern adoption. The first is she chooses the family. The second is she decides the level of contact. And as you get to know her, you kind of come to a middle ground with that. But the expectation is typically, you know, the minimum is often visits about once a year. And then the third choice women make today, this is pregnant women choosing adoption, is they can choose how things go at the hospital. This is their baby. They can see their baby, hold their baby. They can decide who's in the delivery room. And if they've built a strong relationship with the adoptive parents, many times it is the adoptive mom. Sometimes it's the adoptive dad too. It's their decisions to make because they have to say hello before they can say goodbye. And so that's why we think it is important that they do spend time with their baby. And they may want you there too, and they may not. And either is okay. But the beautiful thing that adoptive parents find through this is they often find what I shared at the beginning, that that we have, and that is really having a heart for the birth mother, these women who are making these amazing, strong, brave decisions. And, you know, it's easy to think, well, gosh, but wouldn't it be easier if we just did it like the 50s, you know, take the baby and then it's all fine and it's closed. The lessons we've learned from the past is that closed adoption is not the best for anyone. And let me share why. It's not the best for the birth mother because, honestly, she's living every day the rest of her life with this hole in her heart. She doesn't know if her child's dead or alive, doesn't know where they are, doesn't know anything, doesn't know if they hate her, literally knows nothing. What we also discovered from that era is that adoptive parents started to struggle with certain things because they didn't have information. And you think, you know, as we came into the 60s and even the 70s, scientific discoveries were really increasing quite rapidly. And things like medical histories became more important. But adoptive parents had no place to ask, nothing. And then you get into, you know, thinking about the medical breakthroughs today where, you know, bone marrow from a family member. If you didn't have that option and you had a three-year-old with leukemia, you know, that could be a death sentence. There's just a lot that suddenly adoptive parents were like, wow. Or when the child got older, started to go to school, started to develop some type of symptom, and you go to the doctor, well, you know, it's important. We need some health history here. We don't have any. That was tough. And that remains tough for families thinking about international adoption too. And then lastly, the child. You know, we learned two things from that era. One is this contact. The other is about telling our children. That era, children weren't told until they were old enough to understand. Well, the downside of that is by the time they're old enough to understand, they're old enough to also think a whole lot of things about their parents, themselves, when they find out everything they thought was true was a lie. You know, why did you wait till I was 12 to tell me this? Why is there is there shame? Is there something embarrassing? What is so bad that I couldn't know? So nowadays we tell children from the beginning that they're adopted. They make beautiful children's books, wonderful board books, all kinds of stories to normalize adoption. So a child grows up knowing they were placed for adoption. They also grow up knowing their birth mother loved them, and they know who she is. Granted, it's hard for a baby, say, to have a relationship with their birth mother, but as the child gets older, the relationship between the birth mother and the adoptive parents often deepens, and the child starts to have an understanding so that by the time the child can truly understand, oh yeah, I grew in her tummy, but you're my mom and dad, they know her. This isn't a stranger. You won't see these stories on those reunion shows where, you know, an 85-year-old woman has desperately been looking for the child she placed for adoption only to find out that, you know, he died in his 30s of cancer. Those stories don't happen because the child always knows. And it's a healthier place to live in the truth, both for the child, for the family, and for the birth mother. Everyone's living with truth. And you don't see an awful lot of open adoption stories in the news, even though they take place every day, because they're not those dramatic stories that movies are made from. It's kind of become more ordinary life. Certainly here at Lifetime, it's ordinary life, even though every adoption is a miracle and every adoption is unique. And even adoptive parents who have adopted more than one time, maybe in similar situations, they can tell you every adoption is unique and your story will be unique too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that adoptive parents definitely have question marks about open adoption and how to reconcile their concerns or fears or just the lack of information. If you're listening to this today and would like to receive open adoption information, shoot me an email, kim@lifetimeadoption.com. Let me know your first and last names and what state you're in, and just let me know you'd like to receive open adoption information, and then we can get that over to you so you can learn a little bit more. And we've compiled some great information and some resources that you can look through and really become educated in a short period of time. Those question marks that you may have in your mind about open adoption and parenting through open adoption, typically they are based on myths. And so it's very easy to understand how to kind of reconcile that through your parenting and choices you'll make. As Heather shared, one thing is normalizing it from birth so the child is never confused. But there are lots of other things to learn about that. And I think just modern adoption, modern Christian adoption especially, as we are called as Christians to be a light in this world and to love one another, that when you come together, you have a knowing of each other. You're partnering with this birth mom. That's so different from what Heather was describing about, you know, the past. And also knowing that your child's birth mom was empowered to create her adoption plan and make all the little decisions. She's much more likely to feel confident about those choices for years to come because she was educated and empowered and supported. And that's modern Christian adoption, at least here within Lifetime.
So let's switch gears a little, Kim, and let's talk about who chooses adoption today. What does a birth mother look like? And I want to say, first off, many people think it is teenagers who made a mistake with their boyfriend, and maybe they come from good Christian families, and their families are supportive and helping them choose adoption. And I want to let you know that, yes, I'm sure that girl places babies for adoption or those girls, but that's not by and large who we see. Most teens today have the ability to parent because their parents step forward and want to help them, or their parents raise the children. It's not teens who normally place. Typically, probably the average birth mom, we'll talk average first. Average is in her 20s. She already has a child, maybe two. She may have been that teen mom. She may have been that teen mom whose parents helped her out, but then she burned the bridges. Maybe they still have one of her children and they said no more. Usually the father is not an active part of her life anymore. If she has other kids, usually the father is not involved at all, including paying support. I would say probably only 20% of birth mothers are active drug users. Some may have used drugs a little socially, but most are not. Some smoke cigarettes. Reality these days is what we're seeing more than we have in the past is marijuana use, especially if they're having morning sickness in their first trimester. They all have certain things in common. One is that they can express that they want more for their baby than they can provide. They, I would say 98% want contact. Families who want closed adoption really shouldn't look into a modern open adoption, modern Christian adoption. Closed adoptions, just not only are they not in anyone's best interest, they also are not the norm in the U.S. unless you're adopting from the foster system, where the mother's rights have been terminated due to neglect, abuse, substance use. Those adoptions may be closed. They may not be. But just to know, if you're looking at closed adoption, often international is a better option. The trade-off is they're not typically babies. So back to the average birth mom. Let's see here. Usually they're not working. They're living in poverty on some type of governmental support. And Sometimes they need help with pregnancy-related expenses, things like food or rent, or even minutes on their phone. That's kind of the average birth mom. I will say we've helped women as young as 11. We've helped them over 50. We have helped a number of women who thought they were going through menopause only to find out they were pregnant. We have helped married couples make adoption plans. In fact, one that was just a few years ago, it was a married couple. They were a married Christian couple. They had two kids in college and they got pregnant and they didn't want to start over. So they told their children and together they all made an adoption plan. And they chose a couple that, in their words, were very much like us when we were that age. It's a beautiful story. We have helped professional women, women who work, women who are very successful. We've also helped women who are developmentally disabled and who may be living in rehab situations or even halfway houses. We've helped women in prison. We have helped women who are not in this country legally. They can still place their babies for adoption. So it's a very, very wide array. Every time I think we've heard it all, then we hear one more. I will say there are not a lot of cases we hear of that are results of rape or incest, although we definitely have helped with both. It can be anyone. I mean, you know, I think of my life. I have two sons, and I was never in a position, but I can turn around and see that, you know, it would have been so easy with one different change or one car accident or one, you know, just one change. It truly can be, you know, there but the grace of God go I, because women don't expect to find themselves in these situations. And one of the things I love about our team at Lifetime is the compassion that they show and the non-judgmental help. Because, you know, it takes a lot for a woman to pick up the phone and say, I need help. I need to think about placing my child for adoption. That phone call takes so much courage. And then to have to go on and admit things that, especially for women, you know, many of the women we work with were raised in Christian homes. So to say things like, you know, I don't know who the father is. I've been with a lot of guys. Or, you know, I have been using drugs. Those are things that can be hard for women who were raised with faith to admit, let alone speak out loud when they're asking for help. It can truly be anyone who chooses adoption.
Another aspect, I think, Heather, is that most women choosing adoption are pregnant while considering adoption. Mm-hmm. Of course, we can assist even if the baby is already born or it's a child a little older. But because a woman is coming to choose adoption voluntarily, she's really weighing the impact of Definitely. Her choice and how that will impact that child. And there's a saying we have here at Lifetime that a birth mom places the needs of her child in front of the desires of her own heart.
Yes.
So sometimes when they become educated about adoption, when they're considering it for an older child, maybe they're going through a rough time. And so they called to inquire about adoption, and we're very, you know, we don't sugarcoat it. We're here to help. But usually it's not something that they really need. They really don't need permanent adoption. Sometimes they do, but usually they don't. And they're very concerned that the child that has come to know them as mom is going to be traumatized. Mm-hmm. If placed at 4, 6, 10 years old. And that is true. So her circumstances and her desire for that child have to outweigh her knowledge of the impact to that child. And I think if that all makes sense so far, you can see why a woman would feel more comfortable choosing adoption if she knows it's a newborn, that gets to bond with the adoptive family from the beginning.
Right. And I think something that's very important too, Kim, is for families to understand that many of these women can parent. They have the tools, they have the ability, they can parent. Many times I see, you know, posts online that say, you know, you need to help these women, give them the resources to parent. Well, most of them have the resources. They're choosing adoption. And adoption is not a hard, is not an easy choice. It is a very difficult choice. It is a choice that involves grief and involves loss. But it is not something that women enter into simply from a financial aspect. It just isn't. And it's good to understand that. There are many reasons women choose adoption. You know, we've heard many. I don't want to be a mom now. I don't want another child. And at the same time, many of them also say, and I don't believe in abortion. So it's good to know that, you know, questioning the motives of someone who's, or I should say, judging the motives of someone choosing adoption is not something we do, because, you know, we ensure all women are educated and have counseling. And we talk about grief and we talk about loss and we talk about plans for the future, so that they really can truly be making an educated, empowered decision for their child. Mm-hmm. Now, with that said, there are also choices for families in modern adoption. Families, when they are adopting here at Lifetime, they're able to set their preferences. And that is their preferences for a child. Age is one. Most of our adoptions are newborn, but we do probably at least one adoption a month of a non-newborn child. They can set racial preferences. They can set preferences in regards to substance exposure, even special needs. Those are the preferences that families can have, and they also have the opportunity to talk to a mother who's chosen them. Now, sometimes we get families that say, well, you know, can we talk to more than one? Usually it only takes one. It only takes one, because how we do things at Lifetime is we go over your preferences. And if you're a family who has completed that application Kim talked about, we schedule a one-on-one phone conference where you can do a deep dive with one of our adoption coordinators on preferences and ask and learn more. So those are the things that we want to talk about, because then what we do with those preferences is we show you to birth mothers who fit into your preferences. And that happens automatically. We don't send cases out and say, okay, who wants, you know, this one? It doesn't work that way. We are able to show families immediately to birth mothers based on the family's preferences.
Mm-hmm. And with Lifetime's coordinators who assist birth mothers, what we call them, birth mom coordinators, they're receiving new intakes and contact from new possible birth moms every day. So mm-hmm. they're always curating these groups of profiles based on your preferences and what birth mom is seeking in a family, your characteristics. Uh-huh. They're curating these. It's not just a system that's automatic. It's not a bot doing it.
Right.
It's a real person who is using technology to make it a little easier. Uh-huh. And also really looking into your file to determine if this birth mom I'm assisting chooses this family, are they likely to say yes? Does she fit everything that they've said they're okay with? Uh-huh. Is there anything about her that's outside of the preferences that they have established? And that's how you're shown. So that way, you know, God's hand is at work. We're not here to get in the way of you and birth mom finding each other and having that connection that was meant to be. So a birth mom can then view your profile and inquire further. And like Heather mentioned, schedule a time for a phone call with you. Mm-hmm. And something here at Lifetime, which we've always practiced, is that you'll know everything we know. And that's
right.
Really modern adoption. The days uh-huh. of an adoption agency just only giving you what she deems you should know are becoming obsolete. I love the fact that we are so open with our families and birth moms and that our families get to know everything we know. I've always loved that. I found that very empowering about Lifetime because you never know what's important to someone that could come down the line, a conversation. There could be a conversation that their child begins with them. And then they're able to say, yeah, I remember. The coordinator that helped us told us that about your birth mom. And they're able to, you know, to provide that answer that a child may have, or just anything that you may want to know that's important to you. We're not making those decisions. So you know everything we know. And Absolutely. Of course, adoptive parents want to know, what will birth moms know about us? Well, they'll know your first names, what state you live in, what occupation you're in. But really, most birth moms are more concerned about your lifestyle and values, personality and interests. They want to know who you are beyond just the external shell of, you know, they're not interested in how much you make. They're not interested in what your title is. No, they're not interested in your square footage. they want to know who you are and what parent you will be to their child. And that's the connection that they're looking for. And I love that, Heather, you were saying that they choose a familiarity, they choose a connection. And I think that has been so such an important part of the foundation as families and birth moms meet, match, and go on to have open adoptions. It's because typically birth moms don't choose families they don't like. They typically don't choose people they disagree with. So she's on your side. She's probably your biggest cheerleader. Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, Kim, Heather, there's a question. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's open up and take some questions.
Yes. So we talk about children that are not newborn. How old are the children that we help adopt? Thank you, Megan, for your question.
You know, normally, you know, I answer that question. Normally, we try to not go above 6 years old. And there's a number of reasons. I will say personally, I think it is the older a child gets, the more difficult it gets. And I think, you know, if you can make that transition, kindergarten, maybe first grade, the transition is a little easier than it is when you have a child, say, in third or fourth grade, when they're established in a school. But that being said, there are still reasons to consider adoption when they are older than that. But like I say, at Lifetime, we try to stay under six. The only time we've gone above is when maybe it's a sibling group that does include a number of young children. But it's been quite rare. The adoption process is a little different. Obviously, you're not going to the hospital to pick up the child. Families typically will travel to meet the birth mother and the child, spend a little time together. And then if it seems to be a good fit, that's when they will begin it's called a transition plan. And it's over the course of a few days to 2 weeks, depending on the age of the child. And the child will just begin to spend more time with the adoptive parents and less time with their birth mother. We just helped with one of those who did the transition plan over the weekend. It was a little guy, was about 3 years old, I think. And I think the transition plan was about 5 days. He's still FaceTiming with mom, or that's the plan, I should say, to FaceTime with mom periodically, especially when he is having a tough time. It's reassurance for him that she's still there. She's not going away. She is ill. And that was her motivation for placing him for adoption. They don't really have much in the way of family. She wanted him to have a two-parent home and a mother who's not ill. And so that was her motivation. And it, you know, I think those are some of the hardest calls to take are moms who are doing that, because their heart is so torn. They love their child. They feel guilt. They feel many times distressed or depressed. Maybe they're struggling with mental health, but they want to hold on. So it can really, really be a challenge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think for those same reasons, we just don't hear from them as often as pregnant women wishing to make an adoption plan for a newborn and have you there at the hospital at the birth and everything. That's more of our norm. You said one visit a year. Are the adoptive parents responsible for paying for the mother to come visit if it's out of state, or is it virtual visitation? Thank you, Stephen, for your question.
You know, that can kind of be worked out. Typically, you know, it's easier for the family to pay the birth mother to come and visit them than for all of you to go visit her. Both are options. Some, you know, if it's a professional working woman, no, she's going to buy her own ticket. Virtual visits certainly are on the uptick, but what I want to encourage you is, with going into this with an open mind, you really can't predict the relationship. This may be someone that, man, we can't wait to go spend time with her again. And how great, you know, she lives half an hour from Disney World. We can go visit her and go to Disney World. This is going to be awesome. And then maybe, you know, because you love her, you thought so much of her. She's so strong. She's so brave. And then she kind of ghosts you and you're kind of like, well, what about our visit? What about Disney World? That happens more than you would believe. Adoptive families, sometimes that's a real struggle, that their birth mother isn't as interested in the visits as they thought she was going to be, and they care so much about her, they want to see her. And I'll tell you, that's the result of the birth mother knowing you care about her, you love her, you accept her, so she doesn't have to hang on so tightly. Not that one visit a year is hanging on tightly, but that is what we hear so much. And it is just amazing how, I was watching something the other night, and the conversation was really about how your heart can love so many people at once. I know if any of you on the call have gone from one child to two children, often you think, gosh, I don't know that I've got enough love in my heart for a second child. And then that second child's there and you're like, oh my gosh, how could I even doubt that I would have enough love for two children? And it just, you know, God has given us this amazing ability to love. And that love will extend to your birth mother. And it's hard to see that now, but it really is. It's difficult to understand because you don't know her. It may be like, maybe especially for women, thinking about when you grow up and you're going to get married and you're going to love your husband and you don't know who he is when you're that little girl, but you have this idea in mind. And it's not the same with your child's birth mother because you don't have the same idea, but it happens so frequently.
And Heather, Lifetime's basic definition of visits, when I speak with families and we're exploring their preferences and we're talking about visits, sometimes they just want to know more details about what the visits entail because they want to know whether that's a financial obligation for them. And I want to let you know that you are not obligated to pay for her travel. The travel is the birth mom's responsibility for these visits. I think that as you go through the years, you may find yourself in a position to offer more than what you originally thought you would. Right. And that's very normal to want to fund that plane ticket or that hotel stay for her to come visit. And visits are in a public neutral location. And with us being nationwide, you're not expected to go travel to her state several, you know, thousands of miles away or hundreds of miles away. You're not expected to travel every year and use your PTO for that or your Sky Miles for that. That's not the obligation here. The obligation is the willingness that you're open to seeing her again throughout the years. And I think that is just such a balm on the heart of a birth mom, that they know you're a family willing to see them throughout the years. And as Heather shared earlier about birth mothers not knowing if their child hates them, right? That's a real fear. That plagues the heart of a birth mom, but with open adoption and knowing you're going to have visits, she knows that You're not going to teach the child mean and hateful things about her, that she's a monster out there who abandoned them, which is couldn't be further from the truth, right? In these adoptions we're talking about. So yes, if you'd like more open adoption information to explore, email me, kim@lifetimeadoption.com. Let me know your first and last name and your state and that you'd like open adoption info, and I can get that out to you. Have you, Heather, have you ever encountered a situation where an open adoption is not in the best interest of the child? And does the birth mom always have the right to come back into the child's life? This is from Evan. Thank you for your question.
Well, it's not really about having the right to come back into the child's life. Open adoption and the contact afterward is an agreement that you make prior to the adoption in most cases. Yes, certainly I've encountered situations where it's not in the best interest of the child, but actually it has to do with the choices of the birth mother. We've had situations where the birth mother, maybe she was using drugs when she delivered. And the family said, yes, we're open to visits, but you have to be clean. And then, and the time leading up, it was very apparent she wasn't clean. And the parents have shared or have had us help them share, you know, here are the healthy boundaries. And we can also help share, you know, we know you wouldn't want your son to see you high. You know, we can share those impacts with the birth mom. But, you know, the situations you hear about where it's often not in the child's best interest is when the child has been through some trauma that has involved the mother. And those are often in neglect and abuse situations. And those are often the situations in the foster system. But typically, when you as adoptive parents are able to have a healthy relationship with the birth mom, it is beneficial for the child because, again, this is an opportunity for that child to know that they are loved, to know that their mother made this choice for them out of love. They were not abandoned. And to know more about who they were. Certainly, if the child is experiencing something that is not in it is not going to be with the advice and assistance of a medical professional in the child's best interest, of course. But it's like I say, that's the hardest part to describe when you haven't been through it necessarily yet, because there so many adoptive parents have found their lives enriched by that relationship with the birth mother. And really the beauty of what adoption can look like for you as adoptive parents is almost beyond what you can imagine today. It'll be a unique story. It'll be your story. And the picture of family that you may never have known you were looking for. And really it's putting you in a role where you can play a part of what helps a mother choose life for her child. And also helps her create the life she wants for herself as much as her child.
And that actually segues so nicely into our next question, Heather. As Christians, we feel called to orphan care. Where do we fit into the picture? And this is from Eileen. Thank you for your question.
You know, orphan care is amazing. And it's so lovely how biblically we are called to that. And orphan care truly is, I believe, intentional for orphans. I love the other part of the verse that talks about caring for widows, because in my mind, often birth mothers are kind of included in that they are usually pregnant mothers without a man around. But anyway, orphan care, there are thousands of children in the U.S. foster system waiting to be adopted. You can learn more at adoptuskids.org. That has nothing to do with lifetime adoption. We do not assist in the foster care system. That is all governmental run or run by organizations that get the governmental contracts. Most of those children are going to be older children. Many of them have special needs. And they are many in desperate need of loving parents who not only are able to provide permanency, a safe and loving home, but also to provide extra help and assistance. They may have special needs from abuse and neglect. They may have medical special needs. The other area that is not as heavily in need as orphan care as it was, say, 10 years ago, are the children in international orphanages. You know, in this country, we don't have orphanages anymore, but they still do internationally. And there is a decreasing number of international adoptions, and that is primarily because most countries are trying to focus now more on in-country foster care. So I just saw something the other day on the numbers of international adoption, and it's very, very low. But there are still some countries open, although I will say now at the end of 2022, many of those countries are still greatly affected by COVID and have those services shut down. But like I say, for families who truly want to embrace an orphan, those are the two places that I encourage them to look, especially if you're an older couple who maybe already had children, raised a family, and you feel like the Lord's calling you to give something back. Adopting an older waiting foster child that can be embraced not only by you, but also perhaps your older children who are adults can be such a blessing to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yes, certainly. And certainly we do not consider you older if you're only in your 30s and 40s. So we should define that a little, because everyone on here probably thinks, am I too old? Unless they're like 25.
No.
So there is another question. When you mentioned the government services and the foster system and adoption and everything, is the cost as much as we have heard? And thank you, Mauro, for this question, because this wouldn't be a conversation about modern Christian adoption if we don't really talk about the fact that there is a cost, that there are services you are paying for, and you are hiring a partner in your adoption, and you are paying the staff to assist you. There is a great, enormous cost with outreach and support. I mean, here at Lifetime, we provide each and every woman that reaches out to us with 24/7 support from first contact on into the future. Uh-huh. Now, Mauro, if you would like to receive more information about the specific, you know, the cost and the estimates here with Lifetime, just email me, kim@lifetimeadoption.com. Again, please share your first and last name and what state you're in, and then I'll be able to send that information to you if you're wondering specifically what the cost is. So I don't know what you've heard about the cost, but Heather, anything else you'd like to add on as far as, you know, the cost and just bringing that out into the open?
Sure. No, and it's like you said, there is a cost because you are engaging an organization, but it is really an investment in your family, much like couples who are experiencing, you know, fertility challenges. There is a cost, but it's with the goal of growing and building your family. If you are pursuing adoption through foster care, there typically is not much cost. Again, those are older children, often with special needs. And the reason there is not much cost is because it is the government. There's a huge cost, and it is taxpayer funded. And at Lifetime, we do not take any funds from the government. International adoption often is higher cost than domestic adoption. And part of that is because there can be lengthy stays overseas. So,
and also with international, you have your agency here in the U.S. as well as most likely an agency in country.
Right.
So everyone's working together. Yeah. Right. So that drives up the cost as well.
Right.
Just for practical reasons.
Mm-hmm. But at Lifetime, we do try to keep our costs as low as we can. But as Kim said, it is paying for services to bring your baby home, you know, much like you do when you give birth, except, you know, we do have health insurance that helps cover those costs. One thing I would encourage you to do if you are looking at trying to find financial assistance. I know, Kim, you mentioned emailing you for help with breaking down of the fees and costs. But one good thing that's great for any family to look at is if your employer provides adoption benefits. Many employers mm-hmm. today are providing wonderful adoption benefits, which is money that goes to pay the professionals that help you adopt. And I think more than ever, employers have added that to their packages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it can be, I know the military needs to up theirs. Theirs is usually $2,000 per child. Years ago, when more employers started doing this, it was like $5,000. Now we're even hearing $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 toward
and
their
more.
Adoption and yeah. more. Yeah. Or just tell us how much it is and we'll reimburse you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So how to fund adoption usually, and I know someone had a question. Let me see here. Stephen. No. Emily. Let's see. Emily. Oh, no. This was Jonathan. There you are. Jonathan, your question. Are there any tips or advice you have in regards to best practices on fundraising your adoption? I think that it's really good to make sure you have chosen your adoption professional, your agency that you're partnering with, so that you can name the entity and have that decision already planned out. As soon as you share that you're fundraising about adoption, you're also announcing that you're adopting and there will be a million questions. So it's really good that if you as a couple have already done the research, answered the questions in the deepest parts of your heart, found the agency you're connected, you feel that connection with, you feel aligned with, you've explored with them, and you have been accepted into their program. I would say that's a best practice in fundraising so that people who are contributing to your adoption, especially if it's your church family or a charitable organization within your church, that they know where the funds are going, especially now more than ever in today's world. We're very concerned about that.
Right.
So knowing your partner. A way to kind of alleviate some pressure with the funding is to approach it from a multi-streamed pursuit. So you'll do your savings, you'll have some fundraising, you will look at employer benefits, as Heather mentioned, and perhaps finance the remaining amount to fill in the gap so that you're not left, you know, saving for three more years when you want to be pursuing adoption in a very active, ready way. But if you have more questions, let me know. Also, we have some resources at lifetimeadoption.com/financing. So there were some other, if you want to quickly, how often do birth moms change their mind, Heather? How does that work for a parent, for an adoptive parent?
At Lifetime, we're very happy to say we have a lower rate than most organizations, and that has to do with the services we provide. You know, it can be heartbreaking when a birth parent changes their mind. It can be expensive because you may have engaged an attorney and traveled. It happens. It's a reality. If anyone tells you it never happens with them, that's just frankly not true because it definitely happens. But that's one of the reasons I think we see it less is because we are focused on the relationship. We really want to help you and the birth mother come together and have a relationship for the child. We have a third-party counselor that we think is very beneficial too. That means the birth mother can receive licensed decision-making counseling from someone who is not a party to her adoption. Because quite frankly, I'll tell you, I'm going to be biased. Her adoption coordinator, you know, we know her story. So letting her have that independent counseling is so vital as she's looking to make her decision. Being able to plan and focus on the future, what's the contact going to look like in the future? Also feeling like she has had the opportunity to get to know and trust the family. We do have adoptions that are last minute adoptions when a mom calls us from the hospital, but you know, those times there aren't opportunities to build a relationship. But even then, the birth mom can choose. She can choose the parents. She can talk to them from the hospital bed. That happens. And It really is about, you know, trusting that God has a plan. You know, mm-hmm. I remember one of the adoptions that a mom changed her mind, and it was tough. But the adoptive parents had such amazing faith that they told us, you know what, we're good, because maybe this was God's plan. Maybe us having her for just that short time was God's plan. Maybe we are the only people who are ever going to pray over her. Maybe we were there for a reason. And really, I think being equipped and being armed with, you know, the trust that God is here. This is His plan. This is all for His glory. And it may not always work out like we want it to. I mean, we can all look at things in our lives thinking, gosh, it's not working out how I want it, you know, and cry to God, why? But, you know, at the end of the day, as believers, we all have that faith that He will work everything together for His glory, for good, even when mm-hmm. it's disappointing, even when it may feel heartbreaking. And that is kind of the bittersweet aspect. I cannot tell you the number of families I have had that are there, many in the hospital with their baby, and they're on the phone to us in tears, because here their dreams are fulfilled in their hands holding their child, and their heart is breaking for the birth mother who is saying goodbye. Just, you know, it is just amazing how you can feel that great love and excitement and heartbreak all at the same time. Yet God's empowered and equipped us to do that, and it really is a reflection of, you know, the power that goes into the emotions in adoption. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, like I say, it typically the mother can change her mind before she gives birth. She will sign the papers with an attorney, and she will know the amount of time she has to change her mind. And you want that. You want her to know so she can make the decision. If she's going to change her mind, she's going to change her mind. But all we can do is love her through it and remind her of the reasons she came to adoption in the first place. What's changed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Erin, thank you for this question too, because something that makes Lifetime different is that we continue working with you as our adoptive family, even if a birth mom changed mm-hmm. her mind. As soon as you're ready to get back out there, we're presenting you to new birth moms. And it doesn't change our relationship. Your services continue. You don't actually pay us anything else either. One last quick question that I'll answer quickly for Megan. With newborn adoption, who names the baby? Well, the birth mom is able to legally name the baby at the hospital. The adoption physically, legally hasn't occurred yet. And then adoptive parents have a legal process where you receive a birth certificate with your names listed as birth parent, as the parents, and with the name you've given your child. So you're able to name your child. And sure, sometimes birth moms have maybe a name that's very important to them, and you can have that conversation with the birth mom and surprisingly may find out that that's a name you love as well. Maybe incorporated into the middle name. We've actually had stories where adoptive parents and birth parents had the same name in mind, or that the birth parent's name she had in mind was their grandfather's name or something like that, right?
And we've even seen great relationships form, and the adoptive parents choose to incorporate a part of the birth mother's name in the child's mm-hmm. name
mm-hmm. yes.
to honor her.
Yes. So that's a great, very practical question, because I'm sure you have a little list of names that you've narrowed it down to and want to know, are you going to be able to use that? And you will. Well, we just want to thank you all for being with us. I know we went a few minutes over, but we had such great questions. I hope that this information has been encouraging to you, maybe even eye-opening a little. Sometimes growth isn't always the most pleasant feeling experience. So it might have felt like someone was pushing you a little out of your comfort zone tonight, but that's all a good thing. You are here for a reason, receiving these words and this information for a reason, and it's all meant to equip you for the path that you're on toward the child that God has for you. Again, if you're brand new to adoption and with Lifetime, you are welcome to fill out the free application we offer as a service. It's available at lifetimeadoption.com/apply. We can review that and possibly explore a little further, have a scheduled phone conference, and learn more about your needs. So you can fill that out. If you have questions, give us a call at 727-493-0933 during the day. And also you can email for basic information about Lifetime, apply, APPLY, at lifetimeadoption.com. If you've loved this webinar and you want to listen to more, go to adoptionwebinar.com. We have a lot of great stories there.
And Kim, before we wrap up, I want to say one more thing. You know, I know some of you might be thinking, you know, we've talked so much about birth mothers here, and you may be in your own story, and you may be thinking, you know, we've been through so much. We understand why adoption is like this. We understand we need to support the birth mother, but what about us? And I just want to reassure you that at Lifetime, we see with adoption today how God uses two sides that are often on a journey they never imagined they'd be on, either side, you or the birth mother. But he brings them together for the good of a child and to create a new story altogether. And we know many of you have prayed for a child for a long time. And maybe you're just starting to pray about whether adoption is the path he's calling you toward. I encourage you to keep praying, keep asking God to, you know, show how you fit into perhaps a bigger picture he already sees in your story. And, you know, keep praying that he leads you on the path that he has for you. If it's Lifetime, we would love to explore how we can be of service. And if it is for orphan care, we certainly applaud you for that. But really being able to take that time and discern, you know, to say, God, where do you want me? You know, we support that, and we want to help you in any way we can. So, you know, as Kim's giving out the numbers and giving out her email, it's not to try to spur you to call us. It's saying we want to be of service to you. And if we can help in any way, we're more than happy to.
Not that we don't want you to call us. It's okay if you call us. Just a little joke. But yes, certainly we, as we've always said in our webinars, we want to be, you know, a stepping stone on the path to that greater plan God has for you and your family and that child. So, well, thank you for being with us. And thank you, Heather, for everything you've poured out, even after a long day serving staff, birth moms, adoptive families, everyone. So we appreciate what you've brought to our conversation today and provided for us all. And we hope to talk with you all again soon.